Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio.
Hello.
Can anyone hear me out there?
I can hear you.
Okay, very, very good, finally. Okay, well, folks, welcome. Welcome to another screwed-up version of this show, thanks to Blog Talk Radio. But for the benefit of people who have not been able to hear me, we will reiterate that this is the makeup show for yesterday's show where the storms had kind of wiped us out. The storms are probably going to wipe us out again today as it's storming outside. But I had said, what had we learned from Monday Night Raw this week? And there are several things we learned. One is that you never should have fired Heath Slater. Two is that Akira Tozawa is golden if he's used correctly. And used correctly doesn't mean a serious bad guy or an underdog face. It means a more comedic form of him. Such an R-Truth sort of form of Akira Tozawa, which he's brilliant at. Number three, we learned that you can have a good mixture between plot and storyline and decent matches. Number four, we learned that never write Kairi Sane off, eh? These are all the. And number five, we've learned that a manager, even in today's era, can still get a talent over that cannot get himself over. A manager is still a critical element in professional wrestling. Those are the things we've learned. Now, as far as the Kairi Sane situation is concerned, people wrote me and said, did she resign? Did she resign? You said she wasn't going to be there. She wasn't supposed to be there. Her being there is a surprise, and it made me think maybe she did re-sign, but from everything I can find, she has not re-signed. She has been offered a contract with larger money, but she has not re-signed yet. Now, the way this was supposed to go was that someone, probably Charlotte Flair, was supposed to injure Kairi Sane, and Kairi Sane was going to retire, go back to Japan, be a little bit of an ambassador for WWE in Japan for a while, be with her husband. Because of Nia Jax injuring her for real, that did not get to take place. So now she could be coming back just for no other reason than to get re-injured by Bayley or Sasha Banks and still carry out that exact same plan. That will probably happen if she hasn't re-signed. If she has re-signed, well, then all bets are off the table, and I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do with her. But they'll probably have something big planned because she's not going to stay in this country with her husband not in this country if she's just going to be relegated to catering. So obviously they must promise her something if she's considering staying here. So the first thing we'll talk about is the Kairi Sane situation, because it was a big surprise, Mike, to see her there. And it makes me think that she's at least open to the idea of possibly re-signing.
Right. And the thing is, as you look at her, I mean, she's actually a very talented person. I mean, she's very good on that recorder that she plays, you know, that flute-type thing that she plays. She's good in that character. It would be a shame to lose her. Now, if she's re-signed, one of the possibilities is, they've got her, you know, they've got Bayley and Sasha with the tag team championship right now. And, what's-her-name has the Raw championship. But if they re-sign her, one of the possibilities is that both her and Oscar are going to figure into, well, something's going to happen. We know that they're going to have that tag team championship match next week, because that was the stipulation, right?
Yep.
You know, so that was the stipulation with this match. So we know that that's going to happen next week on Raw. So if they re-sign her, the possibility is that she's going to figure into that next week might very well be the start of the seeds of animosity between Bayley and Sasha, and with a possible loss of the tag team belts, you know?
Yeah, there's a lot of ways they could go here. Again, if she doesn't re-sign, this could be the last time you see Kairi Sane. She gets injured. It fuels the fire of Asuka versus Sasha Banks, having injured her friend. That's a possibility. It's also a possibility that they've offered her the belt for a short period of time to get her to stay. There's a lot of possibilities here. That's why it's a good move. Now let's talk a little bit about Heath Slater, because people wrote me instantaneously asking me, did he resign? Did they rehire him? No. Heath Slater had some time left on his contract. This was a one-off, basically. It's just a one-off. But you know what the funny thing is about this one-off? It showed the lack of foresight in the WWE when it comes to who you should fire and who should remain. Anybody who can cut a promo like that, you should probably not have fired. I mean, he was very, very seldom given the stick. And if this is what he can deliver, you lost something. And you lost something for really a relatively little amount of money. Heath Slater was far from your top, you know, paid guy. So for a relatively little or small amount of money, you lost something pretty big. And you lost the possibility of having a decent long-term feud between a guy like Heath Slater and Drew McIntyre. Because here's the ironic thing. As Heath Slater was cutting his promo, I couldn't help but think, this destroys Dolph Ziggler. And the reason it destroys Dolph Ziggler is I'm not interested in seeing Dolph Ziggler anymore against Drew McIntyre. I want to see Heath Slater. Can you imagine if that was the buildup? Can you imagine if the buildup was, you didn't call me when I was fired, you didn't, you know, you weren't the friend you should have been, and I want a match. Because if I win, how can they fire me? I'm their champion. If I win, I still got a job. That's a hell of a lot more interesting, Todd, than Dolph Ziggler versus Heath Slater. I mean, versus Drew McIntyre.
Well, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, I'd rather see that match than Dolph Ziggler. That's like a big money match right there between Slater and McIntyre. And That'd be a good program there. Have a few matches with a few pay-per-views, and have there'd be a big good build-up right there between the two of the three members of 3MB right there, feuding over that championship belt.
There is no question, Mike. They dropped the ball on this. They missed the boat on this. And the fans' interest was piqued only to have a 30-second match that meant nothing. Now, I know they're not going to let Heath Slater get in a ton of offense because he's going somewhere else to ply his trade, so I get that. But, man, for a relatively little amount of money, you could have had the fans eating out of the palm of your hands in a feud, a friendly feud even if you wanted to, between Slater and McIntyre over this belt that could have really went somewhere.
Right, and furthermore, and here's something else to think about. We know that at some point it's going to be McIntyre versus Jinder, right? I mean,
yep.
Can you imagine a three-way feud between those three guys?
Yeah, you could have had a lot. I'm telling you, for a relatively little amount of money, you could have had a lot. And by the way, Heath Slater proved he could really handle the microphone, huh? And, I mean, can you imagine? Can you imagine? You would have had a great three-way because you could have had Jinder be the bad guy, clearly saying the both of you are jealous because I was the first one of our little group to hold that heavyweight championship. And I was the third man. I was the third wheel. I was the one that people didn't consider. I was the one they said, well, you're along for the ride. But guess what? I proved I was the best of all three of you. Slater could have the animosity of saying, you know, I'm still your friend, but I'm really disappointed the way you treated me. I didn't treat you like that. And I'm fighting for something bigger than Jinder Mahal's ego or your wanting to prove that you really are the chosen one. I'm fighting for my job. Much like, you know, Drake Maverick. You would have had something really good here. Really, really, really good. And it's just a damn shame that the WWE is so nearsighted with these things that they can't see the forest for the trees sometimes. Anyway. Kairi Sane makes her return and actually defeats Sasha Banks via disqualification. Now, a lot of people said if she was leaving, they would not have let this happen. They would have not, even by disqualification, they would not let her beat Sasha Banks. That's not true. They would have probably given her this win because they wanted to set up the tag team title match. So I'm still not convinced she's staying. I'm not convinced she's staying at all. Because she just was recently married. Her husband's in Japan. I'm sure she wants to be with her husband. There's possibilities of travel restrictions back and forth. If she goes down there, she might not be able to come back for a considerable length of time. I'm not convinced. I'm leaning toward Kairi Sane is going to be injured Monday night and Asuka is going to be out for revenge at Extreme Rules. That's what I'm thinking. Anyway, let's go to the... Rey Mysterio and Kevin Owens versus Seth. Well, we should talk a little bit about Randy Orton, I guess, backstage saying that he's going to team up with Andrade and Angel Garza, and we're all third-generation wrestlers, and Ric Flair saying, look, you don't want to piss Randy Orton off. He's in the worst moods I've ever seen him. This is all good. This is all good. And in a real-life situation, there are people writing me saying, how is Ric Flair there at the Performance Center? With COVID running wild, like Hulkamania, how is Ric Flair there, walking around, backstage, no mask, no nothing? Well, look, Ric Flair himself said, and I quote, you are safer at the Performance Center than you are at the grocery store. It's 100% true. They don't test you when you walk in the grocery store. They don't even take your temperature when you walk in the grocery store, and guess what? There's 1,000 people that nobody can control who they are or what they do in the grocery store. The Performance Center is a controlled environment. He's absolutely 100% correct. So for the people who are online calling him an idiot and calling him a science denier, check yourself. He's 100% correct. Anyway, we see the return of Kevin Owens, who has decided, I guess, that he's clear to wrestle. And once again, we do not see Austin Theory. There's some problems here. And I don't know which it is. But either Austin Theory has tested positive because he's not been there in 2 weeks, or the allegations that came out with the speaking out movement, one of them was against Austin Theory, has forced the WWE to suspend him. I don't know which is true. At any rate, Kevin Owens, once again, is on automatic pilot. I've never seen a guy lose my interest so quickly as Kevin Owens. Kevin Owens went from one of the guys I was very interested every time he came out to, oh, God, it's him again. Just not interested in his shtick at this point. Now, they defeat Seth Rollins and Murphy, and then Rey Mysterio delivers what has to be the jump-the-shark moment, maybe in the history of Raw, and there's been a lot of them, but this has got to be the jump-the-shark moment. He says, my stipulation for our match is that it's an eye-for-an-eye match, which has now been confirmed that the only way you can win this match is to remove your opponent's eye from its socket. That's thinking. Remove your opponent's eye from its socket. Well, I'd love to know how they're going to do it. I'd love to know how they're going to fake that. Because the bottom line of the situation is they can't really successfully. So now you've actually advertised something you cannot deliver. Nobody's going to have their eye removed. So it's going to be some kind of gimmick thing. It's not going to work. We already know it's not going to work. The only way it's going to even remotely look good is if Ray loses, which he may, because he's not re-signed his contract, and he asked for a pay raise and was told no. Flat out no. No pay raise. He's working without a contract as we speak. If he didn't want to, he doesn't have to show up for Extreme Rules. I mean, he literally doesn't have to. So, you know, it's good that he's an honorable man. He's not gonna promise fans something and not show up. He's gonna show up to Extreme Rules. But beyond that, I don't know. If they don't sign him by Extreme Rules, he's probably gone, and he'll take Dominic with him. So I don't know where that's gonna go. They're gonna try really hard to sign him by Extreme Rules. Obviously, if they don't, then you've got your answer. Ray's going to lose. They're going to have some gimmick thing built into the mask, and it's going to look like his eye popped out, and then doctors are going to come and pop it back in, and you won't see Rey Mysterio anymore. That's the only thing I can think of. I don't know how they do it with Seth Rollins. I don't know. There is some rumor that Seth Rollins wants some time off because Becky Lynch is obviously giving birth. So that would be an excuse for him to be gone for a while. So either one could happen, but either way it happens, Mike, I have a feeling this is going to be very cheesy, jump the shark moment.
Right, and if they do it, now let's just say for the sake of argument that, you know, they re-signed him, and it is the other way around that you know, Seth Rollins wants his time off, wants to finally get his time off. Well, if they do that, where does that leave both Austin Theory and Murphy?
Nowhere. That's a problem. That's a major problem. And that's exactly what I mean. It doesn't sound likely. I mean, it could happen, and they just let Murphy go out on his own, I guess, and I don't know what they're going to do with Theory. But it doesn't sound likely. But either way, Todd, a match where you got to pop your opponent's eye out, that's really a jump the shark moment. I'm sorry.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, it sounds like a horror movie right there, taking an eye out of eye socket out like they do in movies. Like, come on now. Wouldn't it be easier just to poke the guy's eye out or something like that, to rip it out of the eye socket?
Rip it out of the socket. So here's the thing. They won't let Edge wrestle. It's got to be a non-sanctioned match. It's got to be a non-sanctioned match because we don't want to be responsible if he's injured. But they will sanction one where your eye is pulled out of your head. I mean, come on, folks. That's ridiculous. That's ridiculous. Never should have happened. Now, as far as the Bobby Lashley thing, let's go into that for a minute, because Bobby Lashley is now becoming watchable. And he's becoming watchable 100% because of MVP. Just like he was watchable 100% when he was managed before. The bottom line of the situation is Bobby Lashley is one of those wrestlers who scream, I need a manager. Whether it's Lana, who didn't really make him all that watchable, but at least gave him a storyline, or MVP in this case, who's making him extremely watchable, or Leo Rush, who made him at least get heat. This is the guy who screams, I need a manager. Bobby Lashley with a manager is a whole different beast from Bobby Lashley without a manager. And I suspect it's the Brock Lesnar syndrome, because Brock Lesnar would probably be the same. Without Paul Heyman, Brock Lesnar would be exposed. Not great on the mic. He's going to make a bunch of blunders. He's not going to sound tough. He's not going to, it's going to affect his performance. With a manager, it's golden. This is the same thing. MVP is bringing back managers. And I love every segment. I think every segment is gold. Now, MVP has already said he wants nothing to do with Apollo Crews anymore. But apparently, he's targeting Cedric Alexander now. Now, other than the obvious, don't you like anybody who's not African-American? Other than that obvious connection, which I think at a time like this in our society probably isn't a great idea. Might be nice if you at least found one guy who was, you know, of a different race. But nonetheless, Cedric Alexander is another guy who would benefit tremendously. Shelton Benjamin, who I'm surprised they didn't do that, because that he would have benefited tremendously. There is something to be said about a stable run by MVP that could be golden. And certainly if this leads to Ricochet versus Cedric Alexander, I would love to see it. So, Mike, I think they're making the right moves with Bobby Lashley, and MVP, I think, has been nothing but... Now, in the ring, he's not. But MVP has been nothing but gold on that microphone since he came back.
Right, and think about this. You're talking about, you know, well, it could be considered a racist thing if he's not going after a white guy. But then again, think about this. They could put together a group, and basically it'd be somewhat of a Nation of Domination type, you know, group minus the radicalism, but, you know, or a Black Four Horsemen, you know?
There's something to be said about a group managed by MVP. There is no question in my mind that he has helped Bobby Lashley tremendously. He has actually put some interest behind Apollo Crews. I could see him potentially putting some interest in Cedric Alexander. So I'm definitely digging that. We'll have to wait and see if how this plays out, but I'm assuming not everyone is going to turn down MVP. Apollo Crews already has. I don't see everybody doing it. Now, another thing that we should be complimenting Raw on this week is you have very much upped your ante in 3 weeks in terms of women's wrestling. And here's why. You have Bayley and Sasha on the show. That's good. You have Asuka, who is absolutely killing it right now. She's killing it right now. Asuka is like one of those baseball players who get on the hot streak and they're just carrying the goddamn team. And they're batting, you know, 420. And you can't get them out. And you're just like, wow, it's so much fun to watch because they're just on this insane streak. Well, that's Asuka right now. She has found her niche. She is obviously more comfortable than she's ever been in the WWE. I think she knows she's safe as far as her position in this company is solidified. She's not fighting for a job. She is one of the main stars, and she's going to be for a considerable time. I think she knows that now. And she's risen to the occasion. But not only that, you now have Ruby Riott clearly taking some screen time, losing, but at the same time, we know what's coming, don't we? Which is Ruby Riott and Liv Morgan are going to reunite. That's going to cause some interest. And obviously the Iconics are going to be their first target, and that's going to cause some interest. So there's some storylines going along. You also have this tremendously exuberant Nikki Cross, which I've not seen before, which is a really interesting character. And I'm watching Raw saying, you lost Becky. You lost Charlotte. Shayna Baszler petered out. She's on main event. That's how bad she's petered out. Shayna Baszler has petered out, and yet your women's division is starting to look pretty damn good. Pretty damn good. Because you're taking it more seriously, and you're starting to utilize the stories that do not involve, which is important. Now, some people are saying, wouldn't it be great if they had Sarah Logan back? Well, congratulations to Sarah Rowe Logan and I think his name is Eric Rowe, who they're expecting their first child. So she's much in the Becky Lynch position. So Sarah Logan for a while will be off the circuit. If she ever decides to return, I would not bank against her coming back to the WWE. I would not bank against that at all. But what I'm seeing, Mike, now is them taking the women's division a little more seriously. And I hate to say this because I'm a huge Paul Heyman fan. But I think Bruce Pritchard and Vince McMahon are starting to hit a little bit of a stride here. And I'm definitely starting to see some improvement in the storylines and character developments on Monday Night Raw.
Right. And I'll say this. I mean, we've talked about her already, but if Kairi Sane does return, I mean, if they can find a way, you know, I mean, they're not, right now, they're not letting anybody travel anywhere, and that's, you know, either coming or gone, so until they do, she's stuck here, so why not use her? If they can find a way to use her, she's just another cog in the thing, and look, that's first off, we talked about both Asuka and Nikki Cross. That character, Nikki Cross, we know what she is now. We know what she is. She's nuts, but she's a good nuts, you know. She's a harmless nuts, you know. And that's what she is. And at some point, they're going to have to split her and what's her name up.
Alexa Bliss. Yeah, and there's rumors that they are. I don't know. Some people have said there's a rumor going around that Alexa Bliss might be pregnant too. I don't know. What I do know is this. In just a few short weeks, you've upped your ante with the women's division. You have Bayley and Sasha, who are always going to be interesting because they have the belts. You have Asuka, who has upped her game tremendously, but of course she has the belt too, so she'd be interesting. But now you've upped it with Ruby Riott, the potential of her getting back with Liv Morgan, the Iconics, Nikki Cross kind of getting her own solo push. And I'm saying to myself, you're really starting to work this division out in exactly the way I said, which is flesh them all out, make them individuals. Now, here's something else I see from the WWE that I'm very much in favor of. And we've screamed about it on this show, virtually from the day one of the show. And that is, if you're going to have a segment, it would be great if you could involve some other angles so that it seems like it's one big universe. In other words, it's not like, here's Bobby Lashley and MVP, and they're talking about this, that, and the other thing, and they never see anybody else. Even though they're not feuding with these people, they never cross paths. That's kind of dumb. Of course they'd cross paths. So what do we see? We see Ric Flair talking to Randy Orton, and here comes R-Truth, who takes a look at Ric Flair and says, wait a minute. For the dirtiest player in the game, you clean up pretty well. Or maybe that's not you. Maybe that's Akira Tozawa, which is dumb. But it's so dumb that it actually takes Randy Orton, who is being dead serious, off his game, and he just shakes his head like, well, how can you even be mad at an idiot? You can't. You can't be mad at somebody this stupid. He's just absolutely too stupid to be mad at, even. He bumped into me, but normally I'd knock somebody down, but this is an idiot. I mean, this is a man who thinks Ric Flair is Akira Tozawa, so what am I supposed to do? Only to have him run away, and then here comes Akira Tozawa, who does such a fantastic job of looking terrified when Randy Orton tells him to stop, even though he's got four ninjas behind him. And then Orton, which I think is a brilliant move, sends Tozawa the other way, almost saying, eh, what the hell, let's cut R-Truth a break. Instead of the traditional heel thing of, yeah, he went that way, and later on, you see them fighting. It was a very, very interesting and a very telling segment, because to me, that means people are trying. They're combining a couple of different angles. They're using an interview like that to further an angle at the same time, a couple of different angles at the same time. They're fleshing out four or five characters. So what are we fleshed out here? We fleshed out that R-Truth is completely nuts, and he's obsessed with Akira Tozawa. Randy Orton, as bitter and mean and focused on destroying legends as he is, doesn't take R-Truth seriously. Not even seriously enough to fight with, because it's just not even worth it to him. Akira Tozawa, even with ninjas behind him, is afraid of everybody. But especially Randy Orton. And Ric Flair is just nonplussed by the whole thing. I think they did an excellent job here, Mike. I thought this was probably the best skit of the night.
It was, and one of the little touches that I bet people missed was when they were talking to Andrade and what you call it, Ric Flair puts his hand on Andrade's shoulder.
Yes. Yep.
And we know what that's about.
Yep.
You know.
We sure do. Yeah, again, nice touches. Touches for the smarter fan. So we get Bobby Lashley, an MVP, defeating Cedric Alexander and Ricochet. Decent match. Randy Orton, Andrade, and Angel Garza. Now, this is an important match versus the Big Show, the Viking Raiders, and in a six-man tag team match. Once again, they use this to further, this is the brilliance. Now, I'm telling you, this is the WWE starting to crank again. And here's why. They could have very easily had Randy Orton walk out on those two. And it would have showed Randy Orton's afraid of the Big Show. He threw those guys to the wolves, but they didn't want that because they said, well, then that might give people sympathy for Andrade. And we don't want Andrade to have any sympathy. So Randy Orton can't walk out because that would lessen Andrade's villainous potential. Let's have Angel Garza do his share, more than his share of the work. Angel Garza is the sacrificial lamb. You go in there and fight the Big Show. You go in there and fight the Viking Raiders. You do all the work. And then Randy Orton, literally haul him out of the ring, grab him by the throat and tell him you're not doing enough when he's doing it all. Because that gives Angel Garza the sympathy, and that's what you want because you're turning him face. Andrade didn't come over to help him. Zelina Vega didn't come over and say, how dare you? Angel Garza is turning face, and they handled this situation 100% perfectly. 100% perfectly. I couldn't ask for better, Mike. I think it was done flawlessly.
Right. And the only thing I'll say is whatever he's done to the heel, to the faces, he now has to do to the heels. That's the only way this is going to work out. You know?
Yes.
That's the only way this is going to work out.
Yeah, they can't make Garza the guy who just wins clean, and he's going to have to be that guy who says, hey, I still cheat, I still take the shortcuts, I still do what I have to, I still play the mind games, I just do it with the bad guys. Absolutely. But Todd, they did the right thing by making it Garza the guy that Randy Orton picked on, by having Orton not leave the match like I thought he might, so that it gave no sympathy to Andrade. It shows me that whoever booked this match was thinking and thinking very clearly about the way, the best way to go about this for future.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, whoever booked that, that's the right way how to book that person. And the right person is, I kind of like how they did it. And like you said, it's the right person, right time, right place.
They did a good job of it, and I know the Viking Raiders are losing a lot. That's not good. But for this particular moment, this was the right move. Now, I don't know how many people saw the Ruby Riott interview that I forget what it was on. I saw it. I happened to see it on social media. It wasn't on Raw, certainly. But Ruby Riott basically gave her motivation, saying, while I was out injured, I clearly saw Liv Morgan become her own person. And I realized that she didn't need me. I realized that she's in a different place and that I'm probably irrelevant to her and I didn't handle it well. So obviously she's turning face. And obviously we're going to see them as a tag team again. They're probably going to go right back to the Riott Squad. Very good idea. You need more tag teams. Liv Morgan will work way better in a tag team. Ruby Riott on her own can be fine, but Liv Morgan is better suited to a tag team right now. Billy Kay defeats Ruby Riott. That's okay, because this is all a part of a greater storyline. I'm not worried about the loss at all. I think it's fine. We then get to, of course, Asuka against Bayley in a pretty long match, which is what we were complaining about. We were saying you're building up storylines on Raw, yes, but you're giving us 5-minute matches, which we don't want. Well, you did both this week. This was a very, very good match. And there was one point in the match, and I'm still not sure, which I love. This is what I love about pro wrestling. When someone who watches it as closely and as long as I do really doesn't know if something is real or it isn't, then it was done very well. And there was a spinning back fist in this match that to this moment, I don't know if she really clocked Bayley in the face with it or not, because the reaction of the broadcast booth, including Samoa Joe, is, oh, crap. I mean, she just nailed her. It looked like she nailed her. And Asuka, for a moment, looked like she was literally like, oh, shit. And actually walked over. Referee did his job, went over, and, you know, Bayley rolled out of the ring instantly. And I'm saying to myself, did she just plant one? Because it sure as hell looks like she did. And Asuka don't make many mistakes. So my instinct says no. My instinct says that was planned. But there's a part of me that thinks maybe she just let her have it. I don't know. What I do know is that you utilize Nikki Cross in this match very well. You utilize Sasha Banks in this very well. This was a very, very strong match. Very strong. And it showed how good Asuka is and can be. And Bayley as well. So really what you've had here, you have two bad things, in my opinion, this week on Raw. This announcement of an eye for an eye match is ludicrous. And it does nothing to further either one of these people's career. It literally does nothing. It literally is all, it's almost laughable. It's almost laughable. Seth Rollins' reaction to it is almost laughable, because a normal person's reaction would be, yeah, that's not going to be a stipulation. That will not be happening. No one in the world is going to okay that stipulation, so duh. But for Seth Rollins to just stand there in horror like, oh, my God, I just didn't like it. I think it's dumb. And the second thing was bittersweet for me. I loved it. but I hated it, and that is the Heath Slater thing, because as much as I loved it, I kept saying to myself, "This, you could have had this. You could have had a decent program with these guys, with Drew McIntyre saying, Heath, I didn't offer you a title shot, no. But the reason I did not offer you a title shot isn't because I don't respect you. It's because you're not ready. Me beating you is just going to drive another nail in your coffin. I don't want to drive another nail in your coffin. You're not ready right now. Remember when I wasn't ready? Remember when I was playing air guitar in 3MB? I wasn't ready. Right now, you're not ready. And I don't want to emphasize that. And Heath Slater saying, don't let what I do fool you. I've sat behind that curtain for I don't know how long watching other people wrestle, my friend, and oh, I am ready. I mean, I would have loved that storyline way more than anything Dolph Ziggler and Drew McIntyre can come up with. So unfortunately, watching the farewell, as bittersweet as it was, of Heath Slater, I keep thinking to myself, God, WWE, you could have had something that would have been riveting to me for a month, 2 months, and you just let it walk away, Mike.
I mean, yeah, that's the thing. And they've been doing that a whole lot, you know, in the last few years. And then I also mentioned the fact that they, we know they're going to do something with McIntyre and Jinder at some point. I mean, and had they not fired him, or had they offered him, well, they couldn't do it because he's already headed someplace else, but had they not fired him again, you know, and for so little money.
You know what my storyline would have been, Mike? Let me run this by you and see what you think. Here's my storyline. Heath Slater is not fired. Heath Slater, they re-signed, but they still claim he's fired. Heath Slater runs down Drew McIntyre saying, you're still my friend, but you know you treated me wrong. You didn't call me. You didn't do this. You didn't do that. I was a better friend to you than you were to me. You know that, Drew. In your heart, you know that. And I'm asking you for a title shot, because if I get it and I win, they can't let me go. And McIntyre saying, how do you think that's going to make me feel, Heath, when I beat you? Because you're not ready. So I'm going to beat you, and then it's going to be my fault, right? It's going to be my fault that you're fired. How do you think that makes me feel? Do you think that's fair? You think that's fair to lay on my shoulders that if I beat you, you're gone? And then you have that match. You build up that match with Heath saying, look, I don't want you to feel this way. If I lose, I lose. It's not your fault. It's my fault. And Drew McIntyre saying, and you were absolutely right too. I got full of myself as the champion. I didn't call you. I didn't do this. I didn't do that. I wasn't the friend I should have been. So let's just have this match. May the best man win, and hopefully our friendship survives it. And then very clearly have Drew McIntyre lose that belt. But pretty clearly he did it on purpose. Heath Slater was not fired. And in the coming months, Drew McIntyre is first happy for him, saying, I'm glad you got your job back. If I couldn't have the belt, I'm glad it was you. But then Heath Slater getting a big head about him, saying, yeah, man, hey, who's the chosen one now? Who's the top dog now? I can't win, right? Well, I won. And just have it keep grating and grating and grating on Drew McIntyre's nerves till he finally says, Heath, I was never going to bring this up, but I let you win. I let you win. I owed you that. Stayed up at night thinking, what do I do? Do I put my best friend on the unemployment line, or do I simply drop this damn belt? Which is more important? And I decided your friendship was more important, but apparently that I made a mistake. And Heath Slater can then turn heel and say, you're an idiot. You're just mad. I was always the leader. I was the leader of 3MB. I was the leader of all the factions I was in, except obviously the Nexus. But the Chosen One lost, and that's what you're bitter about. you want your rematch. I'm not going to make you beg for it like you made me beg for it. You would have had something pretty damn good there, and you would have solidified Drew McIntyre as a guy who was such a face that he actually put someone's friendship and their job above the title. And I think even that loss, if you ever want a loss that actually helps a person, that would have been the loss that helped Drew McIntyre, because people would have said, well, we know he let him win. Everybody knows they let him win. He let him win, except for Slater. And now Slater's so full of himself, he thinks he's a big deal. He thinks he's a hot shot. I just think that would have been a great storyline, Mike.
It really would have. And here's something else to think about. And I'm going to keep going back to the Jinder Mahal thing. A few months back, before all this was started with the firings and the cutting loose of people, there was a table for three where it was Jinder Mahal, Drew McIntyre, and Heath Slater. And they were talking about things, and they were talking, and right at the end of the table for three, they flat out said, we'd love to get back together and have some six-man matches. Now, we can't have that now because you fired him and he's going someplace else. But, I mean, they did say that, and that's another thing that got messed up. I mean, you could have had a long series between the three of them, and at some point, then the three of them make up, get back together, and go
yes.
on a run as a group again, you know? But you can't do that
yeah,
now.
Yeah, never lose your potential history for such a low. It's one thing if you say, this guy's making millions, and we don't have anything for him. But he wasn't making millions. And to lose something like that for such a little amount of money makes no sense to me. I mean, I know there's going to be people out there screaming, you can't have Drew McIntyre lose to Heath Slater. It looks dumb. No, it doesn't. Because for the rest of his life, all these bad guys can say, oh, yeah, you're a tough guy. You lost to Heath Slater, man. Enhancement talent. Knowing that's not really true. I didn't lose to Heath Slater. I let Heath Slater win to keep his job because he's a friend of mine. That would have been a sore spot for I don't know how long. There's so much you could have done with that. So what do you get out of Slater? A short run as a heel champion. You get it back on McIntyre anyway. Slater is bitter. You get some more matches out of that. Maybe you get some three-way matches even with Jinder Mahal, and then you get Slater realizing maybe I was wrong. I guess he did let me win, and going back to being friends. When the chips are down. I mean, could you not see that? Could you not see these guys having bitter three-way matches with Heath Slater being bitter that you let me win? That's more humiliating. Drew, that's more humiliating than losing. Don't you understand that? You letting me win was more humiliating than losing. And a real friend wouldn't have done that. And then Jinder Mahal being who he is. You get those three-way matches going around, but when, at some point in time, Drew McIntyre is getting a three-man beatdown by somebody, guess who shows up and has the reuniting in the ring? You tell me that's not good? That's good. That's classic wrestling. Where they said, look, we've all had our differences. I did wrong things. You did wrong things. We all did wrong things. But it's over. Because when the chips were down, we were there for each other. That's what counts. You threw it away for nothing. Again, you threw all those possible golden storylines away for nothing. But still and all, Raw was head and shoulders above what it has been recently. Yes, there were mistakes. The eye for an eye match is dumb. Make no mistake about that. And the Heath Slater thing is just a reminder of great things that could have happened that you were had too narrow of a vision to see. Still in all, I'm still giving this an A-. I'm still giving it an A-. Because there was so much character development. We're wondering what's happening with Ruby Riott and Liv Morgan. The Iconics seem to be, you know, solidifying themselves a little bit. Sasha and Bayley are starting to really come along as a heel tag team, and we're starting to see where this is going. Asuka's hit her stride in a way that I haven't seen anybody hit their stride in a long, long, long time. And Nikki Cross is becoming really, really an interesting character, and that's just the women's division. Bobby Lashley has become a new Bobby Lashley with MVP, who is actively seeking other talent, and you know he's going to get some. So this is going to be interesting. Angel Garza is on the verge of a face turn, but we don't know when or where, so that's going to be interesting. Randy Orton's going to continue this tirade. He's going to beat the Big Show, but who's next? It's not going to be Edge because he's going to be out for a while, so who is next? That's going to be interesting. There's a lot of interesting things suddenly happening on Raw, and I'm sorry, but it's not a coincidence. And I'm a Paul Heyman guy. Trust me, I am. I screamed, hand the reins over to Paul Heyman. But this is better. What I have seen in the last 3 or 4 weeks is a marked improvement on the product. A marked improvement. The character development is way better. The storylines are coming together better. There's a lot more to offer. And if it can continue this way, just don't jump the shark with stupid things like poke somebody's eyeball out match. But if it can continue this way, I see a resurgence. I mean, and you're doing this with a very minimal roster. There's a lot of people who are not there. So what does that tell you, WWE? I'll tell you what it tells you. You got too many people. When you have to utilize, when you're forced to utilize the people you have, they step up. When those people don't get a chance to step up because they're just pushed aside, what is it that you want them to do? So this should teach you a lesson. Quantity is not better than quality. Go with the people who are making your vision come true here. Go with the people who are dedicated to doing what they're doing. And go with the people who can make it happen. It doesn't matter how young they are or old they are or whatever. Randy Orton has resurged. Randy Orton was pointless 6 months ago. Randy Orton was like the, you know, Insomniac's dream. Oh, here comes a Randy Orton match. Let me go to sleep. Now he's resurged again because you have allowed him to breathe and said, we got something for you. All in the writing and how it's handled. If you can engage these wrestlers and get them interested in what they're doing and they can throw themselves into it, you're now beginning to reap the fruits of your labor. And there's going to be some guys that fall by the wayside. And, well, that's the way it goes. But there's going to be some people who rise out of the ashes. I think Akira Tozawa could rise out of the ashes and be a player here. I really do. There are some people who I really think are not going to benefit from this. I think Aleister Black's one of them. I don't think Aleister Black's going to benefit from this era. I don't necessarily think Ricochet is going to benefit from this era. But I think there are some people who are going to benefit from this era. I give it an A-minus, Todd. What is your thoughts?
I give it an A-minus, too, as well. I like the spot with the...
Hold on, let me get you back. Go ahead.
I like the spot with Angel Garza getting yelled at by Randy Orton on the outside. And I kind of like that spot right there.
You know what's great about the Angel Garza spot, Mike? You never once believed for a moment he was actually scared. You believed he was working Randy Orton into believing he was scared so he'd leave him alone. In other words, Angel Garza was like, if I look pathetic and weak and scared, he won't do anything. But I'm not any of those things. Almost like a con man. I'm beginning to feel that they're going to handle Garza right. And if they do, I think you got another major player.
I really do. I think they got another major player. And look, what they're doing, and I'll give it an A-minus as well, but what they're doing with MVP is exactly what we've said they should have been doing with Heyman. You know, Heyman, you know, MVP is actively seeking other people to put in his group. I mean, we know what Heyman is. Heyman is basically right now a guy who's managing a guy who's hardly ever there. Why not have Heyman go after other people? You know, why not?
I agree with you 100%, Mike. Paul Heyman was so wasted because for a guy who's brilliant on the mic, he was told all you have to do week after week is go out there and say, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Paul Heyman, and I am the advocate spokesman of Brock Lesnar. People got sick of that. He had so much more to offer on the mic. Why could he not go back to that style he used to have of really, you know, using that microphone to further a woman perhaps in his stable or another or a male in his stable? There's so many things you could do. And I'm still telling you that we are going to get eventually, I don't know when it's going to be, but I got this feeling we're going to get Brock Lesnar versus Bobby Lashley. I got a feeling we're going to get it. And the payoff, more than even Brock Lesnar versus Bobby Lashley, is going to be MVP and Paul Heyman on that mic, Mike.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's a money match, and those are going to be some money. Now, who's going to be the face and who's going to be the heel in that thing is all up in the air because, I mean, we know that right now is MVP, but we also know that right now when you see Heyman, he's going to be playing the heel as well. Now, could they use that feud to flip Heyman and flip Lesnar? Possible. You know?
They could. Or they could use it to flip Lashley and MVP. There's so much you can do. This is what I'm saying. I'm beginning to see the WWE setting up things that aren't obvious where you say, well, it looks like it's going in this direction, but I'm not 100% sure how this is going to work. For instance, Bayley and Sasha, we are automatically assuming Sasha's going to be the face. I'm not 100% sure that's true. Because I'm starting to see some social media things that make no sense that I think is a swerve. Like Booker T. Booker T getting on and saying, Sasha Banks is a major draw. She's excellent. She's the best of the best of the best of the best. And Bayley isn't really great at anything, but she's good at everything. And then having, you know, Sasha basically say, yep, well, you know, I went to NXT and that's why the ratings are up. And I'm starting to say, maybe no. Maybe they are going to do this with Bayley going back to her old self saying this what didn't work. I don't know. I still think it's going to be Sasha that's going to be the face, but I'm not 100% sure. I'm not 100% sure what they're going to do if they do Lashley and Lesnar. I'm still not 100% sure they're going to turn Garza the face and not Andretti, but I think so. But then again, we have this weird thing where Andretti, we know, is fixing to be, you know, Ric Flair's son-in-law. What would happen if Randy Orton targeted Andretti? Where the hell is Ric Flair's loyalty is going to lie? There's so much you could do here. There's so much you could do here. And I'm beginning to see the WWE setting up the chessboard in a really good way to confuse the smarter fan as to what direction they're going, Mike, and they haven't done this in years.
They haven't done it in years, and that's the thing. I mean, look, we mentioned the fact, well, the rumors about Sarah Logan. Maybe that's why she hasn't signed with anybody, is because her and Roe are going to have a baby, and we know what's going to happen with that. And the fact of the matter is the way it's looking is that her other two partners are getting back together. So let's just say, for the sake of argument, that she has her baby, she comes back, and they re-sign her. Well, there you go. Now, will she be a heel or a face? I don't know, but they could be a series of matches between the three of them, a series of matches between, you know, Logan and at some point, you know, it's going to happen. The three of them are going to get back together, you know?
Yeah, see, when you set up a chessboard with just a traditional move where your opponent can say, I know what their next move is. They've only really got one. As opposed to setting it up where you say, they got four or five moves, I'm not sure which way they're going, that's the successful chess player. Well, that's what the WWE is doing now. We don't know if Kairi Sane re-signed. If she has re-signed, we don't know whether they're going to win the tag team championships or she's going to turn on Asuka. She could do either one. You could get a great program out of Kairi Sane versus Asuka. You could also get a great tag team run and help further the Bayley and Sasha rift. Lord knows what you might get. We don't know if Alexa Bliss, when she comes back, is going to be happy that Nikki Cross is on her own, or she's going to be pissed. We don't know if there's going to be a feud or a reuniting of friends. We're not sure. We're not sure where the Garza thing's going or where Selena Vega's loyalties are going to lie. We don't even know what's going to happen with Ric Flair because, like I said, are they going to bring real life into this at some point? If Randy Orton had grabbed Andrade instead or starts, you know, bullying Andrade in any way, is Ric Flair going to say, hold the phone? We don't know. This is the way wrestling needs to operate, where you say there's several good moves. One might not be any better than the other, but we just don't know which move they're going to do. That's the beauty of pro wrestling. When it's done right, the smartest of fans still has to say, I have a pretty good idea where it's going, but I can't be 100% sure. That's what I'm seeing now in the WWE. And as much as I love Paul Heyman, I think Paul Heyman was glossed over by the fans want to see 20-minute matches with great athletes going at it and no major storylines, just, you know, a couple of small things and the rest of it just being, he abandoned his ECW philosophy where it was, yeah, hardcore stuff, but also a lot of backstory. And he did it more as, oh, this is a new era. And I don't think the Paul Heyman new era is where the WWE needed to go. This reminds me a lot more of the older era where we're getting a lot of backstory, a lot of storyline. And this is exactly what we need. Now, we don't need eye versus eye matches. We don't need that. That's dumb. And that's the only thing that stopped this. The only thing that stopped this. If they had made this stipulation, loser has to leave the WWE, I'd be fascinated by this match because I'd say, well, now, wait a minute. Ray's not signing a contract. Maybe that's he's losing. Or I might say, well, you know, I don't know how long it has been since Seth Rollins has said me and Becky Lynch want time off, but he hasn't been able to get any. Thanks to the pandemic and all this stuff, he's gotten none. So maybe he's saying, give me a few months and they'll return him somehow. We wouldn't be sure, would we? That's all you had to do, Mike, as opposed to an eye versus an eye. And again, you would have had fans scratching their heads saying, I don't know which way this is going.
Right, and that's the thing. And look, I just want to touch one more time on the whole Paul Heyman thing, you know, and MVP thing. We know where it's going with MVP, and we know that he's going to have somebody, he's going to have more people with him, but just besides just him, right? Besides just Lashley. It wouldn't make sense just to have him and Lashley. Yeah, they have ties, but, I mean, think about this. He could actually have, you know who else we haven't seen lately? Ember Moon. You know?
Yeah, she's still injured, yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
there's a lot you could do, hey, Mike. Look. There's so much you could do with him. And again, MVP
right.
has never been my favorite wrestler. Never been, you know, anybody that I thought was fantastic. But he has really stepped up, Mike. I mean, every time I see him and Lashley backstage now, I turn up the volume a little bit because I want to hear what's going on.
Oh, yeah. And that's the thing. And look, like we said, he's bringing managing back, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, remember, there yes. are times, I mean, look, there were managers that at the end of the career that so obviously that their skills in the ring had lessened, you know, Captain Lou Albano and even to some extent my favorite guy, Skandar Akbar. But because they were so good in the mic and so good as a manager that it didn't matter because, yeah, they would wrestle here and there, but again, they were so good on the stick and so good doing what they did for their guys that they managed that, hey, let them go. Give him the
ladder. Well, I think one of the things you just said is the crucial point, and that is MVP is bringing managing back. Paul Heyman was absolutely lockstep with Brock Lesnar, but that didn't bring managing back because Paul Heyman didn't do much except just reiterate the same line over and over again. MVP is bringing intrigue back to managing, where you're literally saying he is really... Remember when we said Seth Rollins is not helping the career of anyone that is coming under his wing, so how is it that he's saying he's a messiah? Well, MVP is. MVP takes Bobby Lashley, and all of a sudden, ba-boom, 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 Bobby Lashley's winning. And I think there's a dynamic there. There's a chemistry between Bobby Lashley and MVP that works, and that is that Bobby Lashley, you can clearly see, respects MVP. When MVP says something, Lashley does not argue with him. Lashley just says, okay. But there's that little piece of him that still doesn't trust him. There's a great dynamic there. And also there's a great dynamic with MVP being able to say things that even faces who know they shouldn't trust him have to admit that's a little bit true. Such as when he's talking to Cedric Alexander. And says, okay, you think I'm trying to divide you, but hey, are they doing a special on Cedric Alexander on the WWE Network, or are they doing a special on Ricochet? That's such a strong point, and it ties in, it gives you a promotion for the WWE Network special. It gives Cedric Alexander food for thought that any normal person would say that is true. And it illustrates how sneaky MVP is. Those are very brilliantly worded segments, Mike.
They really are, and that's the thing. And think about this. He doesn't really have to go to anybody else now. I mean, and you know, they could play it off that he doesn't have to, because of what he's doing with Bobby Lashley, people could come. Could start coming to him, coming to MVP. Instead of
what
having
I would
him
love
go
to
out
see
to
with
him,
Mike, I would love to see him go to Ricochet and say, "Where's your career been? You were one of the most talented people. The fans loved you. Everybody was so high on you. And what are you now? What are you now? Because you're carrying dead weight." And then if he plays one against the other, even if he doesn't manage either one of them, but he sets them at each other's throat, it would be an interesting dynamic. There's so much you can do when you have someone like an MVP, and that's why I said what you said about him bringing managing back is 100% crucial. That is the exact point. We have said on this show, where are the managers? Where are the people who can create this type of excitement? Well, you got one. And I don't give a damn if he's a producer backstage. He's way too valuable as an on-air talent as a manager. He has got to be on the show weekly causing this type of trouble. Your comedy relief is R-Truth and Tozawa. Your comedy relief is ninjas popping up in segments where you just say, why is there a ninja here? That's your comedy relief. When you have all your ducks in a row like this, and you know what your talent is meant for, when you're not confused, when you're saying, no, R-Truth and Akira Tozawa is not going to be a bitter blood feud, hardcore, knockdown, drag-out, serious match. It's not going to be. We are relegating them to the comedy relief. They're going to be the comedy segment. That's fine. That's fine because now they know what they are, the fans know what they are, and they can be utilized that way. But you're tying them all together. You're not saying, oh, R-Truth never meets anybody from the tag team division or never meets anybody who's the champions. They never cross paths. That's what they used to be. It was like there was five or six different little universes backstage. Now it's beginning to look like one cohesive universe where people are bumping into other people. And they're interacting with other people, even if they don't really have anything to do with it. I also like the fact that they'll walk out of a segment and then the camera will focus on two other people who are having a conversation backstage as well. In other words, you got 6 minutes and 3.5 was taken up by this interview, but then they pan to these people in the corner. That's a good idea, too. That's a really good idea. Todd, then it makes it look much more natural, like there's an ebb and flow.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, when people are not viewing other people, that's a good thing with doing interactive stuff. Just like this past Monday night with R-Truth and and Randy Orton. He's like, that guy's an idiot.
You got R-Truth, Randy Orton, Ric Flair, the Ninjas, Tozawa, everybody in the segment. It was great. And for the first time in a long time, and remember, Mike, and this is the key, they are doing this without Becky Lynch or Charlotte Flair. For the first time, I'm beginning to see a women's division that I say I'm actually interested in more than one or two characters.
Right, and think about this. If it is true that they've re-signed, Kairi Sane, then I am interested in a possible flipping of her and maybe even a possible reuniting of her and Io Shirai.
See, that's what I mean. There's so many branches on the tree now. You can say to yourself, would I be happy if maybe Asuka ends up dropping that belt eventually, but her and Kairi Sane are the tag team champions again? Yeah, I guess that would be cool. Would I be happy if Kairi Sane turned on Asuka and there's a bitter feud? Yeah, that would be really cool. There's branches on the tree. There's so many things you could say, well, almost any move you make is a pretty good move. I might prefer one over the other, but both are good moves. That's what the WWE is lacking. The WWE always painted themselves in a corner where there's only one move. There's only one move. There's only one move. Now they're starting to put themselves in a position where you say there's several moves. And most of them are good. We may prefer one over the other, but still, most of them are good. There's many directions you can go now with a lot of what they're doing. So we criticize them heavily, heavily, heavily on this show to the point where some people would write me and say, why do you even watch? You never have anything good to say about them. Well, now I'm telling you, I have something good to say. They are now beginning to stop painting themselves into a corner, and they're putting themselves in a position where they can make several moves, all of them decent, and we're not sure which one they're going to make. That's called intelligent booking. That's called rising to the occasion and saying, look, we can't be so predictable. We can't be so lazy. They used to be beyond lazy. I mean, it was to the point where it was almost, there is no booking. Now I'm looking at this and saying they're not being lazy anymore. Maybe the fact that they couldn't have any fans in the arena, maybe the fact that half the wrestlers walked out on them, woke them up and they said, we got to try hard. Because now I'm seeing people try hard. And I'm telling you right now, even if they make mistakes, even if they say, I say, oh man, they shouldn't have done that. At least you're trying. I can't fault you if you're trying hard. My problem with the WWE, Mike, is I never felt for the last, I don't know how long, they were trying at all. So that's what pissed me off. Now I begin to think I see them trying hard.
Right, and even when it seemed somebody on the booking team was trying hard, they end up getting rid of that person. Remember,
right?
What was one of the things that was kind of carrying SmackDown? It was the Mandy Rose. And what's his face? And they fired the person that came up with that thing. She was actually trying hard, and it showed. You know,
absolutely. And here's the funny thing: it used to be I was like Raw, I'm more of a SmackDown guy. My favorite wrestler still over there, AJ Styles, but I'm actually starting to get more interested in Raw because I don't like Matt Riddle. I don't see this Braun Strowman thing going far. I don't know where it's going, but it's, you know, I see it just being a stall tactic for The Fiend versus Braun Strowman eventually. I'm not seeing a lot over there that I'm super excited about, whereas in the WWE, I'm starting to really say, look, I'm starting to invest in Angel Garza. I think he's going to be a big star. I like watching him wrestle. It's going to be interesting. You have a major heel in Randy Orton that everyone is 100% invested in as a heel. We're starting to see Bobby Lashley emerge thanks to MVP, and we're starting to see possibly the potential of building more heels. If someone is to turn on their partner or turn, like if Apollo Crews was to join the stable or Cedric Alexander, we got a possibility of a turn there. Ric Flair is now stepping up and apparently managing Randy Orton, which means that we now have two managers active. And a third if Paul Heyman shows back up. And the women's division, which used to be so ridiculously inferior to SmackDown, has risen to the point where they've lost two of their top stars, and it's still better than it ever was. So, yeah, I'm going to give credit where credit is due. I never thought I would say this, but I think Bruce Pritchard and Vince McMahon has turned this around, Mike. I'm starting to really feel that Raw is emerging now as possibly going to be the better show.
And here's something else to think about. You've brought – now, can they rebuild it? I don't know, but you brought a person up that – and Shayna Baszler that had all the potential in the world. Now she's on main event, but can they absolutely build her up? Yeah, they can build her up again if they're not lazy, you know.
Yeah, I mean, they haven't done anything to kill her. It's not like she's – okay, she lost to Becky Lynch. A lot of people lose to Becky Lynch. Charlotte's lost to Becky Lynch how many times? Asuka's lost to Becky Lynch. So that's not a kill-all. But you got to use her. Now, maybe they're just better off saying, look, we're going to put her in a show where not many people see her for a while until she gets what we feel is enough experience in the, you know, main events to area to use. I don't know. I've heard Vince doesn't like her. But we'll see what ends up happening there. But even if not, you have so greatly in 3 or 4 weeks improved your characterization. Now we know what everybody is. We know that Randy Orton has emerged as a guy who wants to end his career by saying, I was the top wrestler in the world, and I retired all these legends. We know that Angel Garza is a guy who has a lot of talent, likes to take a lot of shortcuts, isn't exactly fan unfriendly, likes the attention, likes the glamour of it, likes to play con man a lot. Andrade's more serious and wants the spotlight for himself. Zelina Vega's trying to hold together a fractured stable that she knows is clinging precariously to life. MVP is trying to improve his stable and expand his stable while hopefully getting Bobby Lashley to a championship. I mean, there's things going on. Seth Rollins and the Ray thing, either like it or you don't. The only person who seems odd man out right now is Kevin Owens. I don't see any spot for him. I don't see any spot for him. It wasn't even supposed to be his spot. It was supposed to be Aleister Black's spot, and Kevin Owens just took it. So, yeah, I mean, I see potential here. Real potential. And I think that, you know, in 3 weeks, to do that in 3 or 4 weeks is amazing. So, I mean, all the credit in the world to them, Mike. They've managed to turn around my perspective from Raw being a boring, predictable show that was filled with very little personality to a show that is now filled with a lot of interesting characters that I'm interested in the outcomes of their particular storylines.
Right, and here's something else to think about. We're talking about managers and stuff. Zelina Vega is, for a long time, she was the manager. She was the person.
Yeah.
You know, you pointed this out. For how many weeks were basically that group on TV doing match after match, even a double shot in any particular match? How many times?
Yep,
they were basically
times.
Running the show. Yeah,
yep.
I mean, that's the thing. And she could do it again with other people. If you want to turn both Andrade at some point and Angel Garza, you can have her go out and get somebody else, you know, build them
There's
up.
There's no question
you know?
Could,
so,
and you're right. You're right. So there we go. We got Zelina Vega, manager. Ric Flair, technically manager. Paul Heyman, technically manager. He's not around much, but he's there. And MVP manager. You've got managers back on Raw. Hallelujah. All we had on SmackDown was Sami Zayn, and he's AWOL. And he was a wrestling manager because he was the champion when he was... So... even that's not good enough. I really see a tremendous turnaround in Raw. I'm amazed by it because when I heard Paul Heyman was let go of his duties, I said, oh, dear me. I don't know what we're going to see here, but I don't think we're going to like it, especially at a time when there are no fans. I keep saying to myself, what would happen if the fans were here? And I'll tell you what would happen. The roof would be blowing off the building for some of these things. So, Mike, I really think that they're on the right track. I really think they're on a successful track.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I think they really are. And look, there's been rumors all for a long time that Io Shirai is coming up. So, and that would add another person to the situation. Now, where they would put her, I don't know. But if they would put her on Raw, that would add another person to the situation. And you'd have a possible three-way situation between Asuka and Kairi Sane if she stays, and Io Shirai.
Absolutely. All I can tell you is this. There was a time, and it wasn't so long ago, when I said, and I meant it, there is no way to make Bobby Lashley interesting. I just cannot see any way that anyone is going to build Bobby Lashley back up to being anything close to interesting. And obviously I was wrong. MVP has been able to do it. He hasn't done it by himself because they have to write this stuff for him. But the WWE is now righting their ship a little bit and getting their ducks in a row and deciding who is the top guys, who is the middle card guys, who is the comedy relief, who are the people who were just going to have this enhancement talent, and they're sticking with it. And when you stick with it, eventually the fans get used to it and say, this is the way it is. I'm not saying people don't advance. I'm just saying we need to know right now what the hell's going on, and we do now. And it's about time. Anyway, tonight we got the Great American Bash, and we've got Fyter Fest Part 2. This is crucial. Both AEW and NXT have promised to win in the ratings. And the ratings war's getting ugly, with Chris Jericho saying it doesn't matter what the bottom line numbers is. Everybody knows the 18 to 40 demographic is all that counts. WWE saying, you weren't saying that when you were winning. Now all of a sudden you're clinging to this when you're losing. This is going to mean a lot because this is the main night for both. Anybody could say, well, night one didn't have their top matches, so whatever. Well, this is it. This is your top matches. And we're going to see who's interested in AEW and who's interested in NXT. This should be interesting. This is the one night when AEW and NXT ratings really do matter. And I'm expecting it to be close. But if it isn't, it's going to show a marked swing one way or the other. So I'll be very, very interested to see. And we'll be back here on Friday to talk about it. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio.
Wrestle Chat Radio is a Savage Blade production.